Yeah, I'm proud of the fact that Jalen Wright went 202.
Jalen Wright went before him?
He went 202.
Yeah, him. Man, I wanted him.
And welcome to another episode of the Dice Trades HQ podcast. My name is Michael Seipsch. You can find me on Twitter at FFBlitz. And I'm here with my partner, Jeremy Braun.
At Dynasty Madman.
And Jeremy, who do we have with us?
Our good buddy, Matt Walker, at walk_FF. Welcome, buddy. Good to see you.
You should have did it in the same voice you did, Dynasty Man.
Walk_.
I fully anticipated I was going to get the deep baritone on that. And then you hit me with kind of like the sing-songy introduction. It was really confusing.
It's funny because it's been a while since we've done a show. There's been so much stuff going on, but so much has happened since we've done a show. And, you know, right now everybody's like all into their rookie drafts. I know in HQ1, our biggest league, you know, in the third round, going into the fourth round. But what was it that you two guys were just talking about when we went on the air?
Oh, yeah, we're in another rookie draft for Off the Rails Dynasty, Off the Rails Dinopod, a project Walk and I have had for a number of years now, and we have a league for it. And I'm on the clock at 207, just got on the clock in the past 5 minutes, and I was just looking at who's available. And, you know, I hadn't looked at this much today. And Marshawn Lloyd's still there, 207. And a slew of other players, too. But I'm not surprised by Roman Wilson being there, or Xavier Leggett, or Luke McCaffrey, or Adonai Mitchell, you know, A.D. Mitchell. A list of players. I'm not surprised that they're there at 207. It's kind of normal. But Marshawn Lloyd, usually he's gone by now, no? 207? That seems low. Seems like he's dropping.
Right in that range. The name that you didn't mention, and I just pulled it up too, that I'm coming around on, I wasn't there early on, is Ricky Pearsall. You just
totally he's there too.
Overlooked him. Him at 207, given the draft capital and landing spot, and, you know, just going to have to practice a little patience. But I think, to me, Ricky Pearsall's a pick, right? We're in the league together. Probably shouldn't be providing any counsel.
When do you have a pick? I haven't seen you draft.
Oh, yeah. I don't have a pick until the third round, so I'm looking at any of these
Ricky
guys.
Pearsall's not going to be there in the third round, more than likely.
No. You know, Marshawn Lloyd, it's you know, if you're running back needy, you know, as much as people are saying this wasn't a really good running back class, there were some decent landing spots for some of these backs. Yeah. I just have concerns that Lloyd will ever be anything of a –
yeah.
Even like the 40 end of a 60-40 split. He's lightly used in college. He has huge fumbling issues. But other than Josh Jacobs, there's really nothing else in Green Bay. And they always deploy a split backfield. So he's going to get opportunity.
Yeah, he's going to play this year. But, like, you know, what's the split going to be? And before the show started, I just mentioned to Mike, people were talking about what's Marshawn Lloyd's snap count going to be this year. People are a little worried about that. Saw Dynasty Nerds talking about it. But I already picked up Trey Benson in round one, who I really like a lot. He's, you know, was my top overall guy, and I've kind of come around on a few players. You know that. You know, even Jalen Wright, you know, if he gets if he's the guy in Miami, I mean, it's like a match made in heaven. Just like you know, probably Matt and I were talking about this earlier this week. Probably not necessarily this year, but dude's gonna potentially be huge for Miami.
Yeah, I mean, it's a perfect hand and glove fit with Jalen Wright. Traded a future third round pick to go get him too. So you got that kind of like implied desire, you know, to get that guy, right? So he might just have to wait until Raheem Mostert gets hurt or leaves. But wheels are going to be up for him as early as next year. I really like the player.
It's funny that you say maybe next year or whatever. That's what it was supposed to be. You know, all these rookies that you're drafting right now, they're not going to be in your lineup in day one anyways. How many teams are in that league?
It's just 12. A 12-teamer.
Because it's funny, because HQ1, which is a 16-team league, the names you guys just said, you know, the Marshawn Lloyd, he went at 206 in our 16-team league.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
And what was the other one you said? Ricky Pearsall, he went at 207 in a 16-team league. Huh. So it's like four more spots later. But you know, and that's the thing. I know I've heard a lot of people mention it, that once you get to a certain tier in this draft, it's kind of a free-for-all for everything. And so where is that for you, Walk? Where does that free-for-all happen for you in these drafts?
Yeah, I think you're probably approaching it right now in this point. So like in a 12 team, probably like 16, 17 picks in, you know, I feel real comfortable with the first round, probably in the first 3 to 4 picks of the second round. But then at this, I mean, the names we're running through, there's guys that have draft capital, there's guys that have opportunity. You know, some guys I like more than others. I happen to still be a big Adonai Mitchell fan. I think him landing in Indianapolis was really good for him with Anthony Richardson, and already digging the kind of chip on the shoulder approach he's taken with rocking jersey number 10 because of the 10 receivers that were taken for him. That works for me. It seems like a guy that it's going to continue to manifest for him. You mentioned like the Roman Wilsons and the Burtons, like mixed range of kind of opinion on those guys. I mean, Roman Wilson going to Pittsburgh, you just kind of assume he's going to be moderately successful because that's what happens with second round, third round picks, you know, a wide receiver in Pittsburgh. Jermaine Burton could have a massive opportunity next year, assuming T. Higgins is gone, you know, kind of playing second fiddle to Jamar Chase in a Joe Burrow offense if his wrist doesn't fall off, you know, in the next couple months. But this is about that time because players like Malachi Corley, who got decent capital, I'm not that crazy about personally. You know, he's not going to talk about not doing anything in year one, Mike. Like he's not going to do anything in year one. I mean, he's gonna be like a glorified running back, you know, kind of gadgety guy for them. You know, and can they develop him? So this is when it kind of starts to all compress. And then after Marshawn Lloyd goes, I mean, it's a pick your flavor at running back, right? Everyone's liking Kamani Vidal now. Right. Ray Davis is getting a little bit of steam, but these guys are third round picks in my opinion. So this is where it's just muddled. It's, you know, you like chocolate, you like vanilla.
What's your flavor? That's it too, because, and so many quarterbacks in this draft that right around now, 204, 5, 6, you know, this range we're talking about here, and debating what players to take, because I like a lot of these players, but like Matt's saying, they're not necessarily guys you're thinking of plugging in right away. You know you might have to wait. So you literally just think about, okay, which of these guys are the best players, because that's what it comes down to. They're going to ultimately get a chance if they're good, if they play well. But all those quarterbacks kind of drive that talent down into the second further, because we got what, 5, 6 guys going, you know, right, you know, even Penix down at, you know, just went at like 204, I think, in this draft. So, and sometimes he goes higher than that, but so you're, you know, it's really driving the talent down. But, I'm a big fan of Mitchell. I see his name jumping off the page cause I'm a big fan of his. So it's hard for me to like maybe turn my attention to Marshawn Lloyd or even Ricky Pearsall. So I'm at 207 and I need to like phone a friend and get a vote here on like, you know, what to do. So I took your Ricky Pearsall to heart. I don't necessarily need the running back. So during the show, I'll figure it out over the next, you know, hour here. I'll figure out what I want to do. But Pearsall and Mitchell are the ones that kind of, you know, seem like they should be the pick. And it really does come down to some of the questions about Lloyd. I think he's a pretty good running back, like worth the 207. But the questions, you know, and so you have to go with confidence in this realm. And then you get down to the third and you're looking at tight ends, your favorite tight ends. You're looking at like different things where you can scoop up guys that you've liked all along, but you know no one's going to take until the third round.
Yeah.
So you hope your guys there.
That raises a question I have for you guys and something I'm actually really interested in. So I know some people practice kind of like diversity in portfolios. I know we each play in like a significant amount of leagues. I have an unhealthy amount of Adonai Mitchell because he was my wide receiver 5 and he's being drafted closer to that wide receiver 10 that he was taken in the NFL. So I've been getting tons of second round Adonai Mitchell at this point in time, and I don't pivot from it. When I evaluate and rank players, that's how I'm going to take them. So if they're available in that spot, and maybe even if a Roman Wilson or a Jermaine Burton or, you know, even a Jalen Polk, who I wasn't as high on, who got the capital, is sitting there, I'm selecting Adonai Mitchell every single time and moving on. And I know some people just, you know, even like John DeBarry, he'll just blindly pick a different player at a certain point because he's like, if I'm wrong, you know, I can't be this heavily leveraged. And my thought is, if I'm right, I want to be this heavily leveraged. And why would you do the work if you're not going to just trust your process?
Well, when you say, what do we do? That's exactly what I've talked about for the last, what, Jeremy, 6 years, 5 years, whatever.
7 years, you know, man.
If there's somebody that I like and somebody that I believe that I want, and pretty much if you look at all my teams, I try to get the same people in all those leagues. Because like you said, if you did the work and you agreed with what you've come up with and you believe in that person, if you have them in every one of your teams and they hit, hey, that's great. If they don't hit, you know what? So what? Then you'll get a different player, someone somewhere else. But I don't want to just go away from it while I'm in the draft. The one thing that I've done, like you just said, where that player has fallen and everything, I've done stuff where in some of these drafts, I've traded back in those later rounds. When I see somebody there that I definitely have on a bunch of other teams, then I want to grab them again, because if it happens. We talked about it a bunch of times with Brock Purdy. I took him in almost every single one of my leagues, but it was always in the fourth round, fifth round, whatever. And I just thought, hey, what the hell? If it works, it works. And it happened to work. It's not going to always work, but I wouldn't go, oh, I have too many of this guy that I like, so I guess I'll take this other guy just so I don't have too many of that guy. You know, I've never played it that way, really.
I think you should. I mean, if you have your players ranked, if you've done your job, you know, and we do that, you know, we spend a lot of time looking at these, but even this year, even though I didn't spend as much time as I normally do, and it's still maybe it's because I've gotten a little bit more efficient with it too, I think, but I have, you know, what I call confidence ratings. And so I have players that I target, you know, based on that, or players I like, and I try to get, but it's like a group of players, you know, like a couple of wide receivers, a few running backs. So I've got a lot of Trey Benson, Adonai Mitchell, like you, not as much Ladd McConkey, because I didn't have him as high as Adonai Mitchell. But then you start looking at after the draft, landing spots and different things come out. And so, you know, those ratings aren't permanent rankings that we have. And so those players kind of, you know, maybe rise on the board and you start thinking of it in a different way. So not like John does, but I guess some diversification as drafts go on. But it's usually if, you know, those players are not available that you wanted before, the Keon Colemans and Trey Bensons and, you know, Mitchells, those guys are gone. Or even, you know, at tight end or whatever position, at quarterback in Superflex, you just hope to get one of the top guys, right?
Yeah. But if you're not near the top, if you're not near the top, I mean, look, we just, what you said earlier about the quarterbacks are pushing down the talent. If you look at HQ1, we, in the first 10 picks, six quarterbacks went. Six.
In a 16 team league, right?
It's really a 16 team league. Yes, like,
you know, you have to do that,
right?
Because, right, you're not going to be able to trade for him. It's more difficult to trade if you're on the lower end. You're not getting any of that value. So,
absolutely,
it really emphasizes, you know, striking early on those type of players. And then,
case in point.
But the only other point I was going to say, then you could say, Jeremy, was that, yes, this is a 16-team league, and we see six out of the first 10. But Jeremy said it before that with Superflex now, everybody seems to be doing that. And even in the real NFL, you know, the first bunch of picks, you got quarterbacks. So even in a team that's maybe a 14-team or a 12-team team, we are seeing more quarterbacks go in that first round and pushing players down. Jeremy, for as long as I've known, has always done it that way. He always has a crap ton of quarterbacks on all his rosters, you know, because you just never know. What were you gonna say, Jeremy?
Yeah, and then you trade them away and you don't have any, and you see quarterbacks go in a row at 1, 2, three, and you're staring at pick four. And I would suggest to anybody who asked me what to do with pick four, and that would be take JJ McCarthy. But I didn't do that. I didn't take my own advice. Instead, took Marvin Harrison, Jr. So, and you know, in a league like ours, a 16 teamer, particularly when you need a quarterback, I think everyone probably expected that I was going to take that player and didn't. You know, and right or wrong, I just couldn't do it. I have moments like that, but I do have a good team that I'm building. As long as I can somehow get a quarterback at some point, I will be immortalized.
If only there was a world where you could have got that guy at 104, but it's hard to not take Marvin Harrison Jr. at that point. I mean, even at a 16 team.
Oh, yeah, you're right. I just saw at 105, J.J. McCarthy went. So you took Marvin at 104, and then, the next pick was J.J. But so, Jeremy, where is that tier for you? Like, you know, Walk just said, like, around this middle of the second round, where it's kind of a free-for-all. Is that the same for you? It seems to be
probably
the same.
Right around the time. Yeah, probably right around the time the last quarterback comes off the board in this. So, you know, definitely in the second round, I still have players that I want at the top of the second. But, like, right now, at 207, those players are gone, and I'm looking at, you know, who do I take here? A little early for this guy, a little, you know, late for, I mean, early for that guy. But I'd say probably the mid second, and it's because the quarterbacks are bringing them down. I think in a lot of years you want the top few picks in the second round, maybe the first five picks maybe in the second round, and you can still get a guy that maybe borderline first rounder. So yeah, I mean, I think that's just kind of how we look at it generally.
Yeah. I still like the idea of at least starting in that second round is to start grabbing the running backs. Even if the landing spot isn't that great or whatever, the way we've been seeing these things happen, you know, you get into week 5-6 and then all of a sudden they're playing their third string running back, you know? So, you know, if you grab if you grab those now, then you're not spending $500 of your fab money for some undrafted rookie that you already have them on your roster, you know?
And it's easier to get a wide receiver 3. I mean, you can almost get those off the waiver wire.
Yeah.
Time's even better in certain seasons. It's just easier to get. We have more of them on our rosters. It's an easier position to get your hands on. So, you know, it's almost, just a scarcity thing with running backs. Like on that team we're talking about, I only have a few running backs that I can, a couple that I can count on, right? Rashad White, Trey Benson. I've got a bunch of guys. You know, nobody's really, I guess, in terms of fantasy. Jordan Mason, Eric Gray, J.K. Dobbins, who, you know, what's he, right? Chase Brown. I have some hopes that he can become a 50-50 guy, but really not much. And then I have like 353 wide receivers. So really the play for me would be probably at this point Marshawn Lloyd in a draft like this at the risk of, you know, missing out on both Pearsall and Mitchell. And like I said, you know, and Walk said, Mitchell's a guy that we both targeted in a lot of these drafts, and I would love to add him, but I have Garrett Wilson, you know. I just drafted Troy Franklin, Marvin Harrison Jr., Ladd McConkey. I've got Michael Pittman. I mean, you know, potentially have an entire starting lineup of wide receivers, 5 wide, few tight ends. Like the needs are quarterback and running back. So,
even having Pittman would scare me off of Adonai.
What's that?
And having Pittman, you said, on your roster, that would scare me off of Mitchell a little bit because you're betting against yourself at that point. So I do let rosters kind of dictate some of those things. And it's interesting because this draft is it's like a social experiment at this point in time, right? With those 6 quarterbacks, such depth at the wide receiver position, considered kind of trash at running back, and, you know, it makes it more valuable. To Mike's point, is that, you know, at the early second round, that's when you got to start stabbing those guys because they're the ones that are going to hit an immediate value.
Yeah.
Right? They're going to pay dividends early on rather than, having a wide receiver 2, a wide receiver 3, you know, that's not going to win you championships. You literally can find wide receiver 3 points on the waiver wire, you know, just about any given Sunday. So, you know, given the depth of this class, I'm looking at my rankings, I could say down to like 17 deep at wide receiver, actually the players, you know, to varying degrees. Like it's crazy that we're talking, you know, a round and a half of wide receivers that I'm comfortable with. And some of these guys you're going to get in round 3, you know, of the draft, you know, so get the running back, and then, you know, maybe you can get a Javon Baker, you know, in round 3 and feel pretty good about yourself still, that you got an upside guy, you know, still tied to a rookie quarterback. Might not be the Adonai Mitchell outcome, but, you know, it's going to be him or Jalen.
That's a great player too.
There was one question I wanted to ask you both. You know, when the draft started in that league, we had an early trade. The draft started going, we had a bunch of quarterbacks taken and everything, but the first trade that happened was from our friend Swags. He's in that league, and he was on the clock at 107, and he traded the 107 for Sam Laporta. And it's funny because he made a couple comments on Twitter about, you know, got my first share of Sam Laporta and everything. And actually at 108, Brock went right after that pick. So that the first tight end went off right after he did that trade. But I was just wondering, what do you two guys think about that trade? Because he was looking to get some feedback from everybody when it happened.
Yeah, two questions. One, is this a tight end premium scoring?
Yes, there is. It's not a giant tight end premium, but there is a tight end. It's a 16-team league, so it's hard to get a tight end.
Yeah, which that certainly factors in. And what did he give to get
107?
The 107. He was on the clock at the 107.
So he traded out the 107.
Yeah, so instead of picking, like at 108, like I said, at 108, Brock Bowers went. So instead of going with Brock Bowers, he traded the 107 and got Sam Laporta.
I mean, if you want tight end, I mean, you know, we saw a year of production out of Sam Laporta. I can kind of understand, and pretty sure Swags is a huge Laporta fan as well. So that kind of factors in. A lot of people don't really like the landing spot for Brock Bowers, you know, with the Raiders. I'm not that concerned about it. Brock Bowers is going to play tight end like Kyle Pitts plays tight end. You know, so Michael Mayer can block all day long in line, and Bowers is pretty much going to be a big slot receiver. So given how they've been compared and what they're saying about Bowers being literally generational, it'd be hard for me to give up a pick to get Laporta with Bowers on the board.
I feel like he overpaid for the 107. Knowing what we know about Sam Laporta and what he was in year one, I would much rather have Laporta than that pick in general. But,
Yeah, the quarterbacks went early. Who did he take at 107?
At 107, it's was it Rome Odunze? Is that how you say his name?
He wanted Odunze, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm probably not trading Laporta into that pick to get Odunze.
Exactly.
I wouldn't have wanted to give up Laporta for that move. I think it's a bad move based upon what he went for. I thought, you know, if you're going to tell me a quarterback fell, you know, given the 16 team, I can buy it. Like if he hit on Laporta somehow in the second round, you know, because he fell a little bit and he already had someone else, you know, then you cash that ticket, you know, and you try and get that quarterback depth. But to go get a wide receiver who I love, Madunze is a stud, but yes. You know, I think that was a bad trade for him, you know, not knowing his league construct, but I'm still, if gun to my head, I'm still saying Bowers over Laporta in Dynasty.
But what you're saying, though, the bottom line for this whole thing is that you're willing to move a known quantity in Sam Laporta, who did something you hope that the player you draft this year does in year one. And you're like, you know what? I think I can do better than that by trading him for a wide receiver at 107. And that's not likely. Dude, that's just not likely to happen. And why would you move out of that spot? Like trade someone else, trade a future pick, why trade Laporta for that pick is my question. I found it. I was like, wow, that's a hell of a way to get Laporta. Good on you, Swags. That's good.
It's on such a different meaning in those deeper leagues.
For Swags, well. I just looked. He has Hockenson also. So he now has Hockenson and Laporta on his team. And I guess, you know, that's a better way to go than to grab whatever rookie he would have got, you know, or maybe not. I don't know. That's why I asked you. And I also thought it was interesting because he threw it out there onto Twitter. He even made a joke about his family not caring. I thought it was cute when he did that. And then there was a whole bunch of other trades, including Jeremy and our friend Dynasty Jax. I think they did four trades together in the first two rounds. So there was a lot of trades that went on between them.
I didn't have many picks in this draft going into it.
I haven't done four trades across like 10 drafts that I've done so far. There's a lot of sticking and picking. There's a couple leagues I didn't even know were starting the draft. I'm like, oh, well, I guess I'm just going to pick. I'm not going to try and make any trades here.
Well, we always say, because to me, the most fun time to trade is in a draft, you know. But in my case, I've traded away most of my picks in that league. I came this close to the fantasy bowl. So I didn't have a lot of ammunition to trade for, but I know Jeremy did. And with our listener leagues, we've scattered them out. So this is only the first draft that we've had, actually. And for my leagues, this is only the first draft that I've been in so far. But I know a lot of people out there have been in probably already a dozen drafts, you know. This year it's been slow rolled for a lot of us. So that's why I just wanted to wonder, because, you know, Jeremy always calls you the tight end whisperer. So I wanted to know what you thought about the Sam Laporta trade and about what'd you say? You whispered? So is there any other tight ends? We were just talking about that when you were saying about grabbing people like in the second round and going later. Is there really any? That's not usually a big position in rookie drafts for people to care about.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we have to make it a premium, right? Because, you know, you have to draw value to the position. Ben Sinnott landed real clean. He got second round capital in Washington. I don't think Zach Ertz is going to be difficult to overcome. Jatavion Sanders, who was my tight end too before the NFL draft, going in the beginning of the fourth round in Carolina. I mean, what's it, Tommy Tremble? and Ian Thomas that he has to overcome with Bryce Young. He's still a straight line athletic tight end. I think he's going to get opportunity early on with the Carolina Panthers. And then a guy that Mayman and I were talking about before this, Eric Gall, is a guy that he fell because, one, he's always falling, apparently, because he gets hurt all the time. But he is tremendously talented and is in an enviable position in Cincinnati, where, what's it, a one-year Mike Gesicki is the only thing that's keeping him from relevant snaps. If he might not fire in year one, because I don't even know where he's at in recovery from that, his back surgery. But I'm more than willing to take the shot on an Eric Gall. And that's not even getting into, like, Theo Johnson, who, if Darren Waller does retire, he's a Bellinger away from opportunity. I didn't like how he didn't really hit, you know, at Penn State, as athletic as he is, but so still athletic. Tested really well. And then there's a few other players out there. I think Jared Wiley's seriously appealing from a kind of a Travis Kelce perspective. That new deal for Kelce is pretty much like a 1 or 2 year deal. All it was to guarantee him money pretty much for this year. It's not like a 4 year extension. Travis Kelce is not playing till he's almost 40 years old. I think he's going for the three-peat.
Yeah. And his end is near. Yes.
Yeah, and that might be it for him. And I also think he's going to be much reduced snaps this year. You kind of saw it during the tail end of last year. I don't think we're getting Travis Kelce, you know, tight end one, you know, anymore. He'll flash in games, but they're going to try and get him through the season at this point in time. So you can get Jared Wiley in the fourth round, even in tight end premium leagues, and he could be a year away from catching passes from Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, in HQ1, you know, I already took Theo Johnson and Eric All, and I was actually talking to Walker earlier today about tight ends, because seeing if landing spot made a significant difference. And, you know, I talked to him earlier this year with about his rankings, and not that mine are altogether different or anything. Like, for instance, I think a lot more of Cade Stover with his former quarterback, CJ Stroud from Ohio State, on the same team. You know, Stover, kind of a fan favorite. You know, I'm biased because I really like the player, but I still haven't moved him up the board in any crazy fashion. He's still someone that I'm looking at, you know, a certain range of the draft. But so we were talking about that earlier, and I do like the Wiley, you know, pick. I've looked at Dallin Holker. I didn't ask you about him, Walker. But Wiley, Jaheim Bell, who went to New England, but I'm not a big fan of his. But the reason I'm looking at it now is because I pick here another we're at 316 with the Manilows on the clock, and I'm coming up, and I'm almost certainly going to take a tight end here. And there's a slew of them. You know, Dallin Holker's still there, A.J. Barner, which I'm not looking at here yet, Jared Wiley, Jaheim Bell, you know, those are the three guys that are available. So, you know, Wiley, I think, is the one that stands out there. And to Walk's point, you know, good tight end. Plus, he goes to a place where, you know, he might not be the number one guy, but it's a nice, friendly place for tight ends that can catch the football.
Yeah, I really like Jaheim Bell in college. I just don't think Jaheim Bell NFL is ever going to be a thing, right? He's literally a big running back.
Yeah, just, like an H-back. Probably, yeah, I mean, it's just more than anything,
and that's why he fell so much to the Patriots, because, you know, he just doesn't fit in any one position. And there's some value in positionless players, but not when they're like 6'2", 240 pounds. I mean, you're just now you're like, nah, I don't know what to do with you. Not like there's so many things I can do with you. Do you play special teams? Like,
you're gonna be playing special teams now, buddy.
Right, that's the problem with him. Dallin Holker, what I hate about him is I'm pretty sure he went undrafted. I think he was a
UDFA,
right? And he's an older prospect and all. I did like the tape I watched of him, but falling all the way out of the draft.
That's bad.
That's a tough one for me. Even going to the Saints, who have a need, you know, they're not exactly like overrun with talent at tight end or pass catcher overall. I mean, they need players on that team. And I still just, you know, the fact that they didn't prioritize tight end at all in the draft and, you know, went and scooped up.
Afterthought,
like 26-year-old. Afterwards, I'm probably done on Holker. Holker was in my top. I think he was in my top eight. Pre-combine, he's kind of slowly walked his way down my rankings at this point in time. And I'm looking, he's 11.
Well, there's so many players too that come out that are athletic and, you know, do something here or there, and they're hanging on the league as like the second, third, fourth guys, you know, and you know, in Minnesota or something, they bounce around the league, like, you know, and they were lower draft picks, but, you know, we still thought, oh, this guy's so athletic, he's going to pan out. It happens all the time, and they don't. And I think just the opposite. is going to happen with Theo Johnson as Bell that you mentioned. I think Theo Johnson's going to be, and other people have said this, a better pro than a college player. You know, he's not an old prospect. You know, I mean, he's not for that position. His age is, you know, great. And his size and strength and athletic ability is like not off the charts, but you know, you're talking about what, like Jimmy Graham comparisons and like some of the metrics were just like, you know, in the past 20 years, he's like a top five guy, you know,
as far as that. Countless times that you bet on athleticism at tight end. Like when all else fails, you bet on athleticism.
And he can block, and he does do it. And he's, you know, he's strong and he's physical. He's probably better than average some of these guys at playing the position as far as in line and all that. But he's also got, you know, I think the potential to develop into that freak pass catcher. So, you know, why not, you know, in the third round, take a player like Theo Johnson over some of these other guys. He had what, fourth round draft capital, wasn't it? I don't know why he's on the board so late sometimes, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, after the way he tested as well, you just kind of assumed, right? But I mean, only two tight ends getting top two round capital, all right? So everyone kind of got clustered together after that. I mean, we did the only other one that went is that Tip Reiman, right? The tight end for Arizona,
who's
going to be like glued to the line of scrimmage, during his time in Arizona. So everyone else was fourth round or later. I mean, Jadeveon Sanders kicked off the fourth round with Troy Franklin. So all these guys were day three prospects, you know, at this point in time. Eric All, Theo Johnson, Jadeveon Sanders, you know. Oh, Johnny Wilson, once he finally converts to tight end for my Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, that's going to be enough win if you want to throw a fifth
round. That's what you were saying, big slot, yeah.
Yes, you know, I mean, if I have to see another interview of him saying they haven't talked to him about it yet, I'm like, I know they told you to say that. There's no way that hasn't been discussed at this point in time, because his only future in the NFL is converting.
Especially if he's talking about it in interviews. You know, we had a few trade offers that people asked us about over at our Dynasty Trades HQ handle. But I was thinking about doing this a little bit of a different way. There's at least, I'm looking here right there off the top of the list from the last couple of days, or 2 days actually. Most of these trade offers are a rookie that's right now a rookie and an established player. So there's a lot of these offers where people are doing one for one. You know, we already talked about Swags with doing Sam Laporta for the 107. But like, I don't know about either answering these specific questions or the idea of trading an established player for one of these, say, top 12, top 16 rookies. Like you said, Walk, where you have that cutoff where it's kind of a free for all. But before that cutoff, are you willing to trade one of those top, that first round, 16, whatever guys, for an established player right now? Is that your idea, or would you rather go with the rookies? I guess it would really depend on your teams. But like these two questions right here, somebody asked us whether you would want in a super flex TJ Hockenson or Bo Nix. And then there's another trade here where they asked us if you want, well, but this is what I'm saying. The other one is, would you rather have Drake May or Chris Olave? So there, yeah. So, but that's what I'm saying. So, but that's what I'm saying. There's different, and it's funny when you say by a lot, because that poll already ended, and 69% said Chris Olave. So
it's bird in the hand, right? But if we're talking super flex, I mean, that's the haves and have nots at that point in time. I happen to also be a big Drake May fan and believer.
Yeah, same.
In Drake May, so he's my quarterback three in this class, and he wasn't going any lower than that. If it wasn't for Jaden Daniels' rushing ability, Drake May would have been locked at number two. It wouldn't have mattered where he landed for me. I just actually believe in it. I believe in the player.
That's where I agree with you on quarterbacks.
Yeah, you know, but I mean, yeah, with a bullet. I mean, I couldn't hit accept quick enough on shipping out Olave. What's Olave done? I mean, what's he, two wide receiver two seasons so far? Like, it's good.
Yeah,
right? He's not going to be, you know, threatening for wide receiver one overall anytime soon. He's a decent wide receiver too on your team, to man's point. I can find that they fall out of the trees.
But that's, you know, but see, that's why, yeah, that's why I was thinking, instead of answering the specific question, I was thinking of the general idea of doing that kind of thing. And Jeremy, for you, are you willing to trade one of those top, like, first round picks for an established player, regardless of what the player is? I mean, obviously everything is going to be team specific and this and that, but is your mindset more, give me the young players that I think are in the top that are going to be good, or give me somebody that's already played a year or two that has been good but not great?
It's a great question, and I've been faced with that dilemma. You know, ordinarily, like, if I needed a quarterback, I'd have no problem trading an established player for the quarterback, especially if it's a quarterback, you know, like Drake May, because I agree with Wacom. That's a player I've had in Devy that I've thought of highly for a while, and same for me, where he didn't drop below the third place in this class at quarterback, and I was really sad when he went. I thought maybe Marvin Harrison Jr. would go at 3 and I would get Drake May at 104 in HQ1, which I should have known better, but didn't happen. So, but like in that case, like if somebody wanted to trade Olave for JJ McCarthy, or the, you know, for the 105 and then draft JJ McCarthy, that would have been the right move too. Especially in a 16 teamer. So, you know, and I'm not talking out of both sides of my mouth. It was a player I didn't want. I think that's the right move, trade an established player. And especially, you know, we have a wealth of wide receivers, you know, to Walk's point, like that, you know, you can get those much easier. So it does depend on the player, how high they're ranked. Do they match? I mean, is it a top 5 running back right now? Are we talking about, you know, Breece Hall or something like that, and you're moving up to get a quarterback, you can have some conversations about. But by and large, I think you have to go in Superflex for one of those top quarterbacks. We did it last year, remember, Mike? I mean, we jockeyed around and moved up in a couple of the listener leagues to try to get CJ Stroud, to try to get, well, any quarterback, because in one league we were both pretty desperate for a quarterback. So I would have moved more than I did to get up there and get Stroud. There's no doubt. You know, I was prepared to do it. So, but I wouldn't do it for Roma Dunsey. There's so many wide receivers in this class, and maybe trade for a Dunsey after the draft, or, you know, and he's just an example, but any of those guys, I mean, you know, you might not get Harrison quite as easily, but, or, you know, either of the top two guys, but at wide receiver, but you could get that guy after the draft. I just don't see the desperation. I don't have those confidence ratings and rankings of my players sitting here where I'm like, oh my God, I have to get Javon Baker, or, you know, bad things are going to happen. So I'm not going to do it unless it's a big position like quarterback. And then, you know, you're willing to give up a lot for that. So I thought Walk's example was pretty good, like what you said, and, you know, and Drake May is a perfect case. If you have a player ranked that highly, what is Olave? What is, I mean, even if it's a player, a wide receiver one, like a player that's been, like, you know, ranked 12 to 14, you know, the past couple of years, you could still justify getting a top quarterback, because you have multiple wide receivers that you start every week.
Well, see, Walk, and then that's my question then. Like I said, without being specific as an Olave or something like that, but a player that is not a top 5 in his position or whatever, because nobody's going to trade you a top 5 in their position to get a rookie pick in the first round. You know, maybe first because they need a quarterback, but whatever. But is that something that you look at doing? Would you care about somebody that may be top 6 to 10 or whatever? Or do you like that future idea of one of these top rookie picks?
Yeah, I mean, there's a breaking point for all of that. I mean, to Jeremy's point, if we're talking in a super flex league, we're at least going 3 to 4 deep at quarterback, and then there's 3 to 4 receivers, and then there's Brock Bowers. So I'm probably not looking to move out of that top 8 unless I'm being, you know, someone's overpaying for that particular spot. But you tell me that, you know, just for example, someone has had enough of Garrett Wilson after 2 years and wants to go get Roma Dunsey. Oh yeah, I'll take Garrett Wilson. When what I've seen him do over 2 years in the NFL, and if over them re-rolling for a Dunsey of someone that I'm trying to think is probably in that 6 to 10 dynasty wide receiver type range. So there are certain guys that if I get to that tail end, the quarterbacks are washed out, the top two receivers are gone, you know, and I'm sitting at 107 on the clock, and someone comes calling, you know, with a Garrett Wilson type offer for me, you can have the 107 in a second. You know, I've seen 2 years of production with shitty quarterback play. for Wilson. So there's players that would cause me to pivot, but you know, this class in particular, like we've talked about it forever. It's you want to be in that top eight, right? Because then after that, it's, you know, it could be anyone, right? It could be Xavier Worthy. It could be Ladd McConkey. It could be Keon Coleman. Who knows, right? Any of those guys could be the best of the other guys and no one would be shocked about it. So, you know, outside of that, yeah, I'm back end because I'm assuming I'm a playoff team as well. Yeah, I'll take the proven player, you know, because so many people get enamored by rookies.
Yeah.
That's why trades mostly happen during the rookie draft, because that's when everyone is paying attention. Everyone is focused on the draft. You have people's attention. After that, you know, it's hit or miss in trying to get things done. But this is when people are trying to get their guy.
Right? See, I think it's true because, like, Jeremy and I, well, it's funny because we usually do a lot of trading during the draft, like we said earlier, mm-hmm. and that's the most fun for me. But most of the time when I'm doing it, it's the later rounds. It's not that first round. I'm not usually trading into that top 10 position place. And what's funny is a lot of times, at least in my mind, I usually think about those top guys. I'll wait a while because maybe if there's one of those guys that I want right now, they just want so much for it. But you know, in a year from now, when the next rookie draft's going and everybody's freaking out about the rookies that are right now, maybe one of those guys can be available. It's not always going to happen, but it's also more likely than not that a handful of those guys will still be around there. You know, we have a couple other trade questions from our Patreons and everything, but I think we were going to hold that off and let's do a quick Patreon show to answer some of those questions. So was there something that you wanted to discuss before we wrap it up, Jeremy, or do you want to go on to the Patreon?
Well, we can jump to hop to the Patreon here in just a second. I wanted to ask Walker, he brought up Troy Franklin earlier. The fall in Franklin. Well, I mean, I know, you know, he dropped a little farther than we expected, you know, in the NFL draft, but he's another player that's available, you know, easily at 207 with a whole slew of other guys. What do you think about him? Do you think he's fallen too far?
Yeah, I'm still a fan. I like Troy Franklin. I actually like what Mike was saying. It's like, why am I going to try and get early and pay that premium? You can get second and third round picks, even in this, for a reasonable price, right? Yep. You give like your third and a second next year, right? And then you figure out that second next year, next time, right? And you get to that player when you want. And just, you know, to the Troy Franklin point, it's unfortunate that he fell into day three, but he was literally like the first pick of day three. And I heard someone say, and it's justification bias, right? But they're like, if there were more comp picks like they were in the last several years, that pick that he actually went was actually a third round pick, not a fourth round pick. It's semantics, right? But he was like pick 100 or 101, whatever he was. He ends up in Denver with Bo Nix, right? So the fall aside, he landed pretty damn clean, right? They got rid of Judy. They don't really have, you know, Marvin Mims. I think he's better than Marvin Mims personally. Yes. Courtland Sutton's not long for the team. And then there's nothing else, you know, on that roster. So Bo Nix is going to trust Troy Franklin. Like, that's clear.
The rapport they already have is going to carry over. They got the same numbers. I mean,
exactly. Coming in together, you know, they have rapport already, established chemistry, all that. Like, for the fall he had, you know, it couldn't have been any better for him. So I'm still there. At one point he was my wide receiver four, candidly, like for the combine and all. He kind of lagged a little bit, and then you heard that he said he was sick at the combine and that's why he dropped weight and he didn't test well. And like, well, that's what I would have told you to say too if I was your agent.
Yeah, exactly. Right? So
I'm not gonna let that just discount, you know, what happened there. But then where he landed and still where I was on the tape with him. So right now he's seven for me. He's a value at that point in time. And you don't even have to take him at 2-7. He's like late second, early third. I mean, I've seen more third round Troy Franklin than I have second round Troy Franklin at that point. Yeah, that's I'm like, Mike, yeah, give me to that 301 then, right? If he's still sitting there, I'm like the NFL, right? Those people that are calling to begin day three, like trying to get to that first pick. Yeah, I will try to move mountains to get.
Well, Jeremy's very happy with that answer because in HQ1, which is a 16-team league, he got Troy Franklin at the 214, which essentially is, you know, what is it? Yeah, something like that. So that worked out great. Yeah. All right, cool. Well, listen. Well, thank you so much for joining us. You know, it's been a little while since we got to do it. There's so much that has happened with the NFL draft, with all the rookie drafts. There's so much more we could have talked about, and we'll hold it off till next week or something. But for right now, we're going to jump onto a Patreon show and answer some of these Patreon questions, because there's quite a few. And unfortunately, the questions are a little bit more difficult than what we just did in the show, because it's not one for one. It's like four things for five things.
That'll be fun, man.
And all this kind of stuff. So, Walk, do you want to tell everybody where you are, what you're doing?
Yeah, most certainly. At Walk_FF on the Twitter. Will always be Twitter. I'm never going to go X or
yes,
you know, whatever else they're trying to do to us over here with Elon Muskville. Also, the Fantasy 40 podcast with John DeBari, episode a week. Heavy Dynasty, rolling to kind of like a seasonal when the year kicks off. So, you know, we're flush with rookies now. Actually recorded earlier today with John.
Oh, right, cool.
So I'm doing double duty today. This is a fantasy bonanza.
Awesome. Exactly. Well, tell John we said hi, and I look forward to you guys have joined one of our leagues. So it's going to be fun having you guys both in our leagues playing around. So, Jeremy's doing all this peace signs, but check us out on Twitter, like you said, not X, on Twitter, on all social media at Dynasty Trades HQ, and we're gonna wrap everything up. So thanks for listening, and Jeremy.
Yeah, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Talk to you later. Bye.